This is Audible. Journeytown Classics and the Gimlet Boys present Lies of the Moon Butler by Denon Cinch. Read by Gail Bench. Chapter 2, Dark Side of the Moon. Butler Hunt woke and for a few blissful moments imagined himself to be back in the servant quarters, nestled in the silken sheets that were given to all Royal Moon servants, even the butler. President Cartwright was no fool, and she understood that it was the little things that gained the greatest loyalty. The sound of a buzzer and the whooshing slide of the Vibratech security door woke him up to the reality of his situation. He was hanging, buck naked in a Teleflex suspensor beam, a sonic spiderweb of subacoustic sound that was keeping him immobile, completely vulnerable, and totally exposed. Beams of bright light suddenly filled the chamber, making him blind and paralyzed. All he could see was light. All he could feel was the pulsing vibration of the Teleflex suspensor. It was strangely pleasant, soothing, calming. But the voice on the other side of that light was stern as the crack of lightning against a dry willow. "Well, well, if it isn't the coming butler," snapped Guard Finch. "I guess you think you got one over on us, Galtrexian mutt." And with that, the soothing pulse of the suspensor shifted and heated up. It felt as though we were being roasted over a blazing fire while rodents nibbled at his face. "Welcome to hell, Butler Hunt," said Guard Finch. "What you are experiencing is the cutting edge of moon torture equipment. With a simple press of a button, I can make you feel anything. Ever wondered what it feels like to have your thumb smashed in a door? With all due respect, I know what that feels like," whispered Butler Hunt. "Well then," said Guard Finch, "that was going to be the only torture for today. But since you have so much experience in bad feelings, let me introduce you to the sensation of being tap danced upon by a troop of 700-pound jazzercise instructors wearing red-hot high heels made of molten lead." "God, no," gasped the butler. There was the sound of a beep and a dry robotic voice whispered, "Running tap dance torture simulation 498. For a horrible moment, he felt the sudden pressure of flaming hot high heels against his exposed naked flesh when the security door whooshed open again and a voice that made his heart surge with love and fear filled the room. "I told you I would handle this, Guard Finch." The voice of President Cartwright was soft, but carried with it the weight of a gavel made of 1,000 mountains. "We'll talk about this later, Gregory. Be gone." "Yes, my president," said Guard Finch, and Butler Hunt heard the sound of his boots marching from the room. "So now it's just you and me," said President Cartwright, her voice as playful as a cat with a wounded mouse. "Do you know what I went through to become president of the moon?" Cassandra asked, turning off the blinding lights. As his eyes adjusted, he saw that President Cartwright was wearing an official interrogation uniform that had been specially made for her by torture expert Dan Lee Fry. It was a beautiful leather suit, dyed in purple. It accentuated every curve of her luscious body until it reached her thighs, where it spread down in tendrils of violet leather that ended in her torture boots, military-grade open-toed boots with razor-sharp heels. His eyes fell upon her boots and beautiful exposed feet. "Now you know why my feet get so sore, Butler. I've been spending more and more time in this horrid chamber interrogating more moon citizens than I would like to admit. It seems that Emperor Galtrax is not quite as dead as we thought, but I'm sure you already know this, traitor. No, Madam President, said Butler Hunt. A tear rolled down his cheek across his beautiful lips. They made eye contact, and then Butler Hunt began weeping.
Greetings, my beautiful ones. It's me, Duncan, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, reporting to you from Austin, Texas. Of course, what you just heard is an excerpt from the upcoming Audible erotic classic, Lies of the Moon Butler. Check that out on Audible. The entire Moon Butler series is pretty incredible. Friends, we have a glorious podcast for you today. Gabby Hurstick is here with us today. Holy shit. Strap in. Get ready to learn about witchcraft, sex magic, and much, much more, including how to banish those dark energies and potentially demonic forces that might be clustered about your home and maybe even in your heart. We're going to jump right into it. But first this. I want to thank Athletic Greens for supporting this episode of the DTFH. My friends, I don't have to tell you that if your brain had nipples, these days would seem like a sander that somebody had non-consensually shoved those nipples against. We're in stressful times, let's just face it. There's so much insanity going on, and we need a way to simplify our existence. This is where Athletic Greens comes in. Follow me here, friends. I know you know people who are like those vitamin people who have like 17,000 different types of vitamins they take a day. Maybe they have vitamin dispensers they use for that project, or maybe they've got one of those weird robotic things that dispenses their vitamins. I've had friends who like have big bags of vitamins they carry around like they're going out into the desert and all they're going to eat is vitamins. I've watched friends projectile vomit vitamins into the air like sick whales spraying this mixture of vitamin E and D out of their mouths just because they didn't eat food before they took their vitamins. I don't want to be that person. I don't have time. I'm not disciplined enough, organized enough, or smart enough to keep track of 16,000 different types of vitamins, which is why I love Athletic Greens. It's a life-changing nutritional habit. Their daily all-in-one superfood powder is your nutritional essential. It's by far the easiest and most delicious nutritional habit that you can add to your daily routine today and empower you to take ownership of your health. They simplify the logistics of getting optimal nutrition on a daily basis by giving you one thing with all the best things. One scoop of Athletic Greens contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, green superfood blend, and more. And it all works together to fill that gaping nutritional gap in your diet, increase energy and focus, and aid with digestion. And it supports your precious immune system, all without the need to take multiple products as though you were some psychiatrist administering medication to yourself in some weird vitamin hospital. Athletic Greens is wonderful. It's just perfect for somebody like me because I know I'm getting all the good stuff without wondering, did I take my vitamins B7, coaxial, 7-3-9 coagulants today? It's wonderful and it tastes good. And here's what's super cool. Right now, you can get a 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 travel packs for free. Just visit athleticgreens.com/Duncan and join health experts, athletes, and health conscious go-getters around the world who make a daily commitment to their health every day. Again, you just visit athleticgreens.com/Duncan. You're going to get a free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs today. Thank you, Athletic Greens. My dear loves, if you enjoy the DTFH, won't you subscribe to us over at Patreon? It's patreon.com/DTFH. And for our current beautiful DTFH family members at Patreon, I've secured a great office space here in Austin, and so we will be back to our normal programming starting at the usual time. Monday, Journey into Boredom, our meditation, and Friday, our family gathering. If you're interested in joining us, why not subscribe? You're going to get access to our Discord server along with commercial-free episodes of the DTFH and much more. Now, with us today is a very powerful witch. I don't know if there's a hierarchy of power when it comes to witches. It just feels good to say a very powerful witch. One thing's for sure, she's brilliant. She's an amazing author. She's, I don't know, supremely cool. So these things all, if you ask me, combine to make someone powerful. And if you're interested in witchcraft, then you really should check out her website, GabriellaHerstick.com. That's GabriellaHerstick.com. She's a profoundly enchanting, wonderful person, and I was really, really blown away by this conversation. So here we go. Everybody, welcome to the DTFH, Gabriella Herstick. Gabriella, welcome to the DTFH. I'm so excited to talk to you today. Thank you for being here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I want to congratulate you. I follow your Twitter and your socials, and I want to congratulate you on, a thousand consecutive days of a practice? What? That is nuts. How many? Wait. I started calculating. What is that? It's over 3 years.
Today, August 5th, is 2 years and 9 months of daily practice.
Oh my God. That is just so impressive.
Thank you.
It made me wonder, what does that look like for you? What is your daily practice?
Yeah. Well, I just want to say first off, I am single with no children, and pretty much I work for myself. So I have a lot of luxury when it comes to how I use my time, which I feel like if I had a family or if I was in a relationship, maybe it wouldn't be quite as much of a priority to literally not miss a day. So I always tell people don't do what I do. If you miss a day of meditating, it's not a big deal. Just get back to it. Just, keep going. I'm just very competitive with myself. So I was I can't lose the streak. And now I really can't. But my daily practice is about an hour in the mornings every morning. It's definitely a mix of different traditions, I guess. I have some ceremonial magic in there. I start off with the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram, which just clears the space of any negative energies, puts the archangels around me, that kind of thing, to just really center myself. I do a daily prayer to one of the goddesses I work with. I do a seated meditation. And then after that, I will pull tarot cards and journal. And I have this ongoing gratitude practice with one of my best friends where every day we send each other voice notes of what we're grateful for and then talk about it. So I record that and just say all the things I'm grateful for as part of my practice and then end my practice with affirmation. So there's a lot of different pieces of it. And tomorrow I'm going to be traveling. And when life gets life-y, when shit hits the fan, there's definitely things that okay, I don't have to journal today. I don't have to pull my tarot cards, whatever. But the seated meditation and the LBRP are non-negotiable. I will do that in a bathroom. I will do that while I'm seated, with my eyes closed. Those are just things that I have committed to. But most of the time, I would say about 95% of the time, I'm able to do the whole practice because I prioritize it. It's just something that, especially after the past year of just everything being absolutely bananas with COVID, I've really, really been able to see how much of a sustaining force and how much of a empowering practice it is for me to have that time just devoted to going inward, being with myself, really accepting where I am that day. And like, you know, there's times where maybe I don't feel the best coming out of meditation, but like, I would say that 97 to like 99% of the time, I leave my meditation practice feeling better than when I went in it.
Wow. Now, you said a lot there. I think the something I've always been very interested in, and I've actually tried it once, is the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. And when and because I do now, I've just primarily studied Buddhism. I've sort of gone away from your lineage, not for any other reason than it's just for mainly for what you just said. I got kids. I don't know if I have the, I wish I had the time to do an hour every day, and I think I could make that work. But regardless, I wonder if you could sort of give me a brief teaching about the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram.
Yeah, so the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram is one of the first rituals that you will learn in really any kind of like Western mystery tradition, which is the lineage of the Golden Dawn. Aleister Crowley's work is a part of that as well. But this is specifically this a ritual based in Golden Dawn magic, which works with the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, which originates as a symbol and glyph of the universe in Jewish mysticism. But in the kind of Kabbalah I study is overlaid with different Hermetic principles like tarot cards and planets and all that kind of stuff. So the lesser banishing ritual is a ritual of the elements and of the body. It aligns you with the tree of life through the highest sphere, which is like the Godhead, to the material realm. And really what it does is it aligns your personal will, which is visualized as this like horizontal line with the divine will, which is a vertical line. And this forms a cross in the body. You can imagine like going through like, you know, your head to your toes is like this divine energy, and then going from shoulder to shoulder is this human energy. And that's what's called like that beginning of the ritual is what's called the Kabbalistic cross, is where you really like align yourself with the divine, with the highest possible frequency available to you. And then you go around the room and you make pentagrams. And what these pentagrams do is that they banish any kind of negative energy, any energy that's not aligned with this divine, 100% divine light. And as you're doing these pentagrams, you're speaking these different Hebrew words that just kind of reinforce this idea of banishing this energy. So you've aligned yourself with the divine, you've banished energy around your room, you visualize these pentagrams in every direction surrounding you. And then you call in angelic forces, the four archangels or four of the archangels that correspond to the different elements and different directions to really connect you with earth, air, fire, water as these like different kind of embodied expressions of the divine. So you call in these different angels, and then you finish again with this ritual called the Kabbalistic cross, which continues to align you with the divine. So even though it's considered a banishing ritual, you are still doing invocations, which means you're calling forth these different energies and entities. So like, it's like you're vacuuming and then like energetically vacuuming a space. And then you're like calling in like reinforcements to make sure that like, you know, there's nothing is going to get muddied up again, for lack of a better word. So it's definitely like a weird ritual. It uses Hebrew and it works with archangels that are found in the Bible. So, I mean, Golden Dawn magic is like, it is based in like Abrahamic religions, which I totally get isn't, you know, something that people are, maybe doesn't resonate with them, right? We each have to find what kind of practices and lineages resonate with us. But I grew up Jewish. My dad's a rabbi. I had a bat mitzvah. So for me, like the Hebrew part of it and the working with this kind of Jewish mystical current in a way that's not necessarily Jewish feels very resonant. And I just really enjoy the ritual. It's just something that like I feel like is kind of like part of my psychic hygiene, I would say. It helps me just feel like I'm really cleansing my space. And then when I do my meditation and affirmations, that's kind of like the more microcosmic, like going inward, focused cleansing that I do. So it's more of like a compliment. And it's a ritual that you can really like adapt. There's different versions of it. But yeah, it's something that I enjoy doing it, but I definitely feel like some people love it and some people are like, I don't like this at all.
I think it's beautiful. I've just watched videos of people doing it. So I'm really interested in spiritual hygiene. I started, I don't even know why I started doing it. I started looking at the Islamic purification rituals and Ooh. Then started thinking about my friends who have taken ayahuasca, I never have. And, you know, the report of being cleansed or purified of some kind of, you know, I don't know what you would even call it. Maybe you have a word for it, but I'm really interested in that right now, just because just purely out of curiosity, I did this cleansing ritual that they recommend and was astounded by the shift in my energy that happened right away. What are the words that are used for it? What dark energy or for the lingering stuff that can get caught on a person or in a space? What is that? Obviously you must think of it as something more than like symbolic. Like many people like consider it to be as real as a disease. What is it?
That's such a good question. I wish I had like a concrete answer, but I feel like part of this journey through like the metaphysical is like knowing things are there, but not necessarily being able to like quantify them in like a logical way, because they're things that kind of defy that like very logical aspect of reality, right? These are like subtle forces and subtle energies. So like I would just describe them as energies. I personally like, you know, some people might describe them as demonic entities or spirits. Like there's a wide array of like what people conceptualize as demons. Some people think that they're manifestations of our psyche, right? Like I know that some people think that they literally are actual demons. I'm probably somewhere between them. I don't really spend too much time like trying to figure out what exactly. I just kind of like do my best to make sure that I'm, you know, centered and that I'm protecting myself and like doing these kind of like purification rituals, as well as like in meditation, I do shielding. So I literally visualize like a sphere or bubble around me and like declare that only energy that vibrates 100% divine light and works in my highest favor can like penetrate that shield and those kind of exercises to really keep out those forces. But I think there's a lot of different energy. I think there's a lot of different expressions of those kind of like more difficult to handle energies, I guess. I think, you know, they can be collective residue of like our, you know, like our fear. It kind of comes in egregore, like with COVID, like all of us I'm still working through and untangling the trauma of the past year, you know, like so many of us are lived in these deep states of fear where like our nervous systems were fried. And like, you know, when you focus on something and when a group of people is focusing on something, it's like drawing in that energy and it becomes its own thing, right? It's like an egregore, like, which is kind of like a spirit that comes to be when a lot of people focus on a certain thing, which may or may not be like a living entity, but is definitely a real energy. Right. And I think that can be part of it. I think part of it can be like, you know, maybe being really stressed and having like not having a good day and being around other people who are negative. And then you bring kind of like those people's energy into your space. Or if you're on land where there was, you know, like really intense negative violence that happened, like those energies can get trapped there in the physical land. So there's definitely like a lot of different manifestations of that kind of like darkness, which is why I think that having any kind of like practice that you do, whether it's using smoke or, you know, saying like a cleansing mantra or doing the LBRP, and like it starts within, right? Like if you're in a place of being centered and you're in a place where you feel like you are protected and you are doing what you need to do to really like not linger in those other people's dark energies or in these spirits or whatever, like when you have that kind of inner protection, then I feel like it's a lot easier to like do so in your, you know, in your space. And of course, like mental illness is real. Like that is also can feel like a spirit outside of yourself, right, like haunting you. So I don't think there's one thing, you know what I mean? I think that's part of the beauty of having like a spiritual practice or living a spiritual life, that we got to create these practices and we got to use the tools that work for us, that resonate with us, that help us like maybe focus less on the what and more on the why, so we can like move through these states of, you know, darkness and feel at least like we're in control. Because like, are we ever in control?
Maybe I don't not, know.
Probably not, which is, you know.
I wonder like, that a lot.
Yes and no.
Well, I mean, look, I'm telling you, maybe the reason I'm interested in spiritual hygiene right now is because I'm in Austin staying at a chain of Airbnbs. And it's like, you know, you walk into some of these homes and it's like outside of just the, you know, funky carpet smell, if you have the slightest openness, you can feel something if something's off, you know. And in the same way, you know, just even talking to you, I could see that your space is all sparkly. And I knew if I was there with you, I would be like, ah, you, when I would go to Ram Dass's house, because he had a practice, a beautiful love-based practice. It was like walking into some kind of like, you know, I don't know, Tolkien elf house or something, just pure love and light. And you walk into some of these Airbnbs and it's like, holy shit, what happened here? Like, what was going on? And then my next thought is, or is it a screen that's allowing you to see a reflection of your unacknowledged stuff? So I'm not going to linger on this much longer, but is there forgive me for trying to find some kind of Cliff Notes easy way of doing that, but is there like a more simplified way of cleansing a space that doesn't involve memorizing Hebrew words and doing the lesser banishing ritual, something we can just do when we walk into one of those weird fields of darkness that often appears in just houses that we find ourselves going into?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that real magic doesn't need any tools. And I think that there's a couple different ways you could really like protect yourself and visualize. Like you can go into space and like doing something, especially in a place like an Airbnb, which is like people are constantly coming and going, which leads to like a very liminal space because there's not like anything really like grounding that energy. It's very temporal, I guess, because it's like between here and there, you know. There's not even like a hotel staff, right? Like it's like very, I mean, I guess the people that live there, but like, I don't know. You could go into a space and like clap and just like go, when you're banishing something, you traditionally go counterclockwise. So you could like start in the back and go counterclockwise and just clap and declare like any negative energies that don't serve my highest good, that are not aligned with 100% divine light, are banished here. Like if you have salt, you can sprinkle salt in the corners. You can, you know, like some places don't allow you to like burn herbs, and not everybody has access to like herbs, but you could do some kind of like spray, Florida water if you have it. And then you can just do some visualizations, like visualizing a sphere of protective light, like emanating from your heart and growing into a sphere around you and pushing out any negative energy. And you can visualize that kind of like metallic or mirrored sphere, like surrounding the whole environment that you're in.
Wait, what's that? What's the mirrored sphere? I saw that. I'm so sorry to do this to you. I smoked DMT once and went into some kind of metallic. What is that? What's the metallic? What is that?
I personally like visualizing like a mirrored orb around me when I need a lot of protection, because like I feel like it reflects and refracts any kind of unwanted negative energy back into the universe. You know, it's like you declare that only that which serves your highest good, or whatever kind of language resonates with you. Maybe like only, you know, like I only let energy that is good for me into this space, and any negative energy is reflected, refracted, you know, sent go back to sender. Like I think it doesn't have to be a mirror, right? You can visualize different colors based on kind of the energy that you want to draw in. So if you're really looking maybe to have like a more calming space. You could work with like a blue sphere. If you work with astrology, you could like, you know, connect that to Jupiter. So it's only like very like good, auspicious energy that is moving into your space. But I feel like the mirrored sphere is like very good at like really protecting you. So you can visualize that like encompassing your whole Airbnb, your room. You can visualize it around you. Like if you're in a crowd and you're like, I do not want any of these people's energies, you can kind of shield that way. But yeah, those are some examples. And just like centering yourself, right? Taking breaths, like stomping your feet, clapping your hands, like kind of jolting that energy, any negative energy away is another way to do it as well. Yeah.
I want to thank Upstart for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Loves, do you dread looking at your credit card statement? Does your credit card statement feel to you like some kind of mythical vampire creature that gets bigger from attention? Are you someone who's failed to realize the reason that you have that insane mass of debt is because one night you got way too high and thought it would make sense to order a $12,000 Euro rack system on a credit card that's got a 15% interest rate? Don't feel bad. It happens to the best of us. It happened to yours truly, where you don't want to look at the thing. You just want to pretend it's not there, even though you feel it around your neck like the famous albatross in the incredible Samuel Taylor Coleridge poem that hung about that sailor's neck rotting, and the stink of the rotting seabird reminding him of how dumb it was to shoot it with his crossbow. That's what debt feels like, and that's why Upstart is great, because it's the fast and easy way to pay off your debt with a personal loan all online. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get one fixed monthly payment. Upstart knows you're more than just your credit score, and it is expanding access to affordable credit. Unlike other lenders, Upstart considers your income and current employment to find you a smarter rate for your loan. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate up front for loans between $1,000 to $50,000, and you can receive funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/Duncan. That's upstart.com/Duncan. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/Duncan and chop that stinking seabird carcass from around your neck. Thank you, Upstart. I'm really illiterate when it comes to the goddess. And I've heard you talk about the goddess as like the whole goddess and then individual goddesses. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could help me understand, you know, and as I was thinking, what are we going to talk about? I started thinking about God. I use the word a lot. But then I start thinking, like, what do I even mean by that word? I don't understand the term God any more than I understand the term goddess. And I wonder if you could teach me about that.
Yay. Well, I feel like that's kind of the weird enigma with these things, too. It's like once it's like an energy that you like even if you say you don't understand it, I feel like you really have a beautiful balance of both of those energies. Like I kind of conceptualize the way that I conceptualize the divine feminine or the goddess is like the, it's pretty similar how I can conceptualize the divine masculine. I really think that they're two ends of a spectrum, but they're different extremes of the same energy. Or you can think of it as like yin and yang, where they're complements with little pieces of each energy. But I have a couple different ways of conceptualizing them. One is more of a Kabbalistic way of thinking about them, where the divine feminine is more of like the form and the actual physical embodiment of the energy of creation, like the body, the earth, the energy of like sexuality as embodied and felt through the flesh, whereas God would be more of like that kind of force energy, the spark of creation, okay, the creative expansive energy.
Cool.
So like that's kind of one way to think, where they're both, you can find one through the other, like they're both energies of like,
wow,
something coming to life, where like the divine masculine might be more of like the seed that initiates it, but then the feminine is more of the expansive energy that is able to like hold that kind of force. But for me, the way that I really work with goddess energy, the way that I think about that and conceptualize it in my own practice, is the energy of love, the energy of connection to all living beings, both, you know, like all sentient beings, the earth, the cosmos. And I also think of it as a frequency that I can tap into that is liminal, that's intuitive, that is not in the head, but that is felt through the body, that is felt in the heart, that is expressed through creativity. And I'm writing right now about the divine masculine, and it's really interesting because I do think that they're very like complementary energies, and that like you can find the masculine through this kind of like warrior, phallic, feminine energy, seen through goddesses of war and like love. And you can also find the divine masculine through the emotions and through compassion and through being grounded in that. So I don't necessarily even think of them as separate, just personally, like I really like feel in service to the divine feminine specifically, because we are living in a time that is so patriarchal, and that has been so kind of patriarchal for so long, that I feel like if we want to find balance between these two extremes, the pendulum has been so far swung in the masculine kind of mode of reality that like to get to the balance, we have to swing the other way. We have to go to the feminine. We have to go back to like the, you know, anti-capitalist, more feeling, more flowing kind of energy before we can find a midway point. And that's kind of why I feel like I feel like you are, I mean, I know that's part of the what you study, but like you have such your heart really shines through with everything that you do. And I feel like you really do have such a beautiful balance of that kind of like masculine and feminine. So even if you don't necessarily like understand it, I feel like you embody it really beautifully.
Thank you. Well, I would like to. I like the way I understand it right now, I get to be around my wife and watch her breath, you know, give milk. I mean, it's the most, when you watch it and you think about it, it seems like something a baby made up. You know, it's like the way humans are, like just the idea of like, well, you put your mouth on your mother and then sweet milk. Have you ever tasted breast milk?
No, oh, we've got. Not as an adult.
We got to get you some. It's. You got to taste it because it's sweet. It like, at least my, like it's sweet. It's, but it's, it's like intense, and it's love. It's this pure white, like condensed love. And then it like changes. If the baby is sick, it changes and gives the baby nutrients to help the sickness. It's the most, on one level, I know it's like, it's just the way things work. But on another level, it is the most absurdly beautiful thing you've ever seen in your life. And so I think I kind of can understand the goddess from that perspective of it's this like dreamy sort of impossibility that's what makes the entire planet, or at least all sentient beings that have mamas, like stay alive. But then, and which is weird because I was watching this awesome video popped up on Reddit of a squirrel mother just like laying back with her kids suckling at her. And I'm looking at the squirrel mother's expression and thinking of my wife's expression when she's exhausted and the baby's drinking her milk, and then thinking about like, oh my God, it transcends species. You know what I mean? This is, is that the goddess? It's that, you know, give it, it just is giving and it can't, I don't know how to put it. It's so merciful. It's so ferocious in its giving or something, you know, like it's ferocious in its ability to just give itself to things. So is that a description of it?
I would say so, definitely. I think for me, like, one of the aspects of the divine feminine too is this idea of immanence, of this divinity being present in everything, which is also a very tantric view where, you know, like, God exists in everything, right, even that which we consider, you know, like, unholy or dark. Like, the divine feminine is, a lot of the goddesses of love are also goddesses of war. There's this intense duality with it. And, you know, like, a lot of the more patriarchal Abrahamic religions, like, there's this idea of transcendence, that you have to leave the body to find the divine, that, you know, the divine, like, God is in a cloud somewhere, God is not here. But really, the goddess, to me, like, goddess religion and, like, that kind of goddess energy is one of seeing this incredible beauty and power and just, like, sacredness, this holiness in everything, in a squirrel, in a tree, right? Like, in being able to make eye contact with somebody. It's a very transcendent force, but it is also very full of dualities that kind of contradict each other, which I feel like is a very, like, magical thing in general, to kind of have these contradicting forces that also complement each other.
I'm curious why. So you have recognized, you clearly recognized this, like, complete imbalance in this old, crusty, antiquated, patriarchal bullshit that just isn't even working anymore. That's the problem. It's just not. I mean, I think it was working during the Industrial Revolution or whatever, but now it's not even working. And nothing that's humiliating it, and it doesn't want to be humiliating it, so that's making it dig its heels in even more. But I'm curious, why write a book on the divine masculine in a time where, you know, it feels like things are already imbalanced enough towards the masculine? Why does the masculine get your attention right now versus, you know, the going in the other direction?
Okay, so I do want to clarify. I'm writing a book called Sacred Sex, which is about sacred sexuality. And I have a bunch of different chapters that speak of different ways of working with sex as a spiritual tool, as a spiritual path. One of the chapters is on the more divine feminine as passed through these temple priestesses of the ancient days, which were women who would serve the goddesses of love and engage in sexual rituals with people who would come and worship the goddess. So they're known as sacred prostitutes. I think that kind of sacred and profane, I don't really dig that. So I call them erotic votaries. Whoa. There's a chapter on that. But I also think that there's no space for men to be emotional or to be connected to their pleasure or to feel that more quote unquote kind of femininity within them. And I think that it's patriarchy is as much of a disservice to men as it is to women. I mean, women, we get the brunt of it more, you know, like we're the ones that receive the violence more and we're the ones that are really shushed in many ways, right? But there's no space for men to connect with their emotions. There's no space for men to think about their pleasure in a way that's not this trope of toxic masculinity. Yeah. So it was really important for me to include a chapter on what it means for the divine masculine to be embodied. But I am writing a book about goddesses called Goddess Energy. That'll be out sometime next year. So that's definitely where more of my focus is on. But I definitely felt like it feels really important for me. And it also is something that, like, you know, like, I'm sure that you have this with your podcast and your comedy. It's like when you're working on something, even if it's for an audience, like, it heals a part of you or you learn about yourself through it. And for me, it's like, as I'm writing these books, like, my life kind of turns into this, like, alchemical furnace that just, like, burns with whatever I'm writing about. And writing about the divine masculine, it's healing my relationship to it, because I do have animosity and resentment towards a patriarchy, you know? And I don't want to have that, especially as a woman who, like, also worships the divine masculine and who also, like, likes men. Like, it's something that I'm doing because I think it's really important, but it's also something I'm doing because, like, I know that if it's something I need, it's something that other people need as well.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, we don't even, I don't, like, guys, don't we understand, like, divine masculine? There's a, that's the other thing that's going on is I think, like, a lot of guys are, like, you know, really not wanting to be assholes to, and like, mm-hmm. wanting to sort of figure out, wait, what is, what, where is the part of me that is, like, this is what it is. Like, I'm a dad, you know, and, like, part of being a dad, there's like a role there. I have to distinguish like a good dad and all the good things I learned from my dad, from all the, like, my dad had PTSD, man. My dad was like, you know, like, which I think what we call toxic masculinity a lot of times is just PTSD. It's just, it, yeah. But, so it's like untangling those two things is such a mind fuck because, yeah. you know, there's all the things associated with masculinity, I think are also things associated with what happens when you come back from World War II. Like the way John Wayne acts, that's the way somebody who saw his friends get exploded or something would act. It's like, you don't show emotion. You don't feel pain. Mm-hmm. You're constantly like exercising or something. And like, you know what I mean? So untangling the two things is a real mind fuck. And I know a lot, I think a lot of guys want to be able to successfully do that, but then also don't want to like be phony in it. Cause there's nothing worse than that when a guy's like faking being like that.
Yeah. I'm a good guy.
Ugh.
Yeah. I'm healed. Ugh, yeah.
Thank you, Squarespace, for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Squarespace is great. If you've been listening to the DTFH for any amount of time, I'm sure you've heard me toot the Squarespace horn, but it never stops being amazing. I use Squarespace for my website, DuncanTrussell.com. Every single week, I use Squarespace, and almost every week, Squarespace gets better and better. They keep adding super cool stuff to it. For example, if you want to do awesome looking email campaigns, Squarespace has got what you need to do that. If you're in a hurry, like you want to get a website up right away, you could do that. They've got mix and match templates. You could just throw something together. But if you want to make something incredible and deep, subtle, nuanced, as beautiful as the undergunt of a mermaid swimming through the crystalline waters of Atlantis, like DuncanTrussell.com, Squarespace gives you everything you need to do that. I'm sure you're aware by now that we don't know what's going to happen if you've got like a brick and mortar store out there. You got to go to an office. It's time for you to go digital prepper and start building your online business, a business that doesn't require you to depend on being able to go to point A, B, or C. Look, I've said it many a time. I feel like I really need to emphasize this. I know someone who sells her socks online. She makes money selling her used socks online. And if there's a market out there for used stinky socks, my God, just imagine what you can do with the incredible things that you are creating or wearing. And Squarespace could be the conduit for you to bring your dreams into real life. Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Again, go to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Thank you, Squarespace.
But that's the thing too. It's like, we're not giving space for this healing. And there's this kind of idea that like, there's a weakness in admitting that you're not okay.
Yeah.
Or there's weakness in that healing. When I think that that is such an act of like compassionate strength to admit that like, you need to do the inner work. I mean, we have the way that we failed veterans in this country is horrible. I you know, it's the patriarchy's, the blood of the patriarchy is not on any specific person's hands. It's not on any generation's hands. It's something that's been happening for a long time, but I really do feel very amidst a lot of fear with the future of just like the earth, there's a lot of hope for the generations that are doing the work, the generations to come that are doing the work, and that we got to redefine what masculinity means to us in service of all people who identify as masculine or who have, we all have masculine energy, you know what I mean? Like, it's these energies, divine feminine, divine masculine, that's the language that we have because it's the language that we've had. And I, you know, as our language evolves, it'll be more supportive in expressing that these are not things that are related to genitals. Like, these are energies that exist within all of us that we live in because we live in a world of duality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, until we don't live in that kind of polarized world, until that time comes, like, we have to work with what we have in this physical realm. And that means using this kind of dualistic model of the divine to find our way through life in. And I think that healing the masculine and just like healing, we're doing it, but it's definitely it'll take time.
Yes, and it probably maybe too much time, let's hope not.
Yeah.
I would love to talk with you a little bit about sex magic. It's something that I have tried in the past with some pretty amazing results, to the point where I don't mess with it. I got freaked out by its efficacy. And then, you know, I'd love to, like, I think one thing that is a secret, something that secretly haunts a lot of folks is porn. And like, when we're talking about the sacred and the profane, you know, to me, like, if I do have to think of something profane, which I agree with you, I mean, I think getting too caught up in that, then you've got guilt, and then you, next thing you know, you're like whipping your back or something in a non-fun way, you know, you're like, you become like secretly, like, you feel like a secret freak, which is the worst kind of freak to feel like. You want to be a public freak.
Yeah.
But is, you know, do you think that, like, porn is is one of those things that brings darkness into a person's life, or has the potential to maybe enforce some of the toxic masculinity stuff, and or do you feel like there is a way to, you know, to like actually that porn and sex magic can happen together, as it could just be another tool? I'm just curious your thoughts on it, because there's an entire raging debate over whether or not it's like fucking people up, you know, if neurologically or whatever. I'm just curious what your take on that is.
I have to be very blunt and honest and say, like, I don't watch porn because it gives me FOMO. Like, I'm like, I want to be doing that and doing these weird things and having this like crazy sex. So I've just like never really been somebody who watches it. I have a very active imagination and a plethora of sexual energy to work with. So like, I just, I just want to say that, like, I'm saying this as somebody who's like, I have friends who do porn. I support sex workers unconditionally. Like, I think that decriminalization of sex work would help us have less, maybe bad kind of examples of porn. But I think it's kind of like anything. It's how you use it. I mean, like, even if you don't watch porn, you watch movies, and like, those kind of reenactments of sex are also like pretty harmful sometimes and totally like not real. And I'm like, there's not even any, it's, you know, there's definitely layers to it. I think that it can be a tool. Part of the practice of sex magic is raising sexual energy. So like, you could totally watch porn as a way to begin that process. But like any kind of magic, there's a lot of a focus and intention that goes into it. And I do think that if you were to like watch porn the whole time, it could, you know, like, you're not going to really be able to focus on your intention. Like, I don't think it's necessarily like a good or bad thing. I think that there are better ways of making porn that are ethical and that support everybody involved.
Yeah.
And there are ways that are, you know, totally probably like not consensual and like anything else. I really feel like with the internet, we're able to kind of see how like everything really exists on the spectrum. Like, the internet's great. Like, I can talk to you. I can do Zoom rituals with the lodge I attend. And I can also like probably, you know, like hire a hitman or do something horrible on it, you know, like find the darkest depths. So I think with porn, it's more of like somebody's relationship with it. And it's like anything, like you can, you know, feel a psychological need for it, which can, you know, it's like I was smoking too much weed and gave myself bronchitis, and then COVID happened. Like, I loved weed and I was using it for anxiety, and then I just got mentally addicted to it, right? Like,
yes,
it's not to say that weed's a bad thing, but it is to say that I wasn't using it responsibly and I didn't have the best boundaries with it. So I think like it can be a tool. It's not really, I can't really speak from experience with using it as a tool. But I do think that there's some really, really like incredible, re-envisioning of what porn could look like. Like I, really love, Four Chambers. They're a really cool like group headed by this amazing woman named Vex that does like a lot of very magical and surreal and like artistic porn. So, and you know, there's like a lot of ethical porn now and a lot more like feminist porn. So I think it's like anything, like the tide's changing, and I think it will. I mean, I would like, I know that there's occult porn out there. I just haven't really wandered into that water, but I'm sure that, as we continue getting deeper into this esoteric revival that we're in, that that'll definitely show up more.
What is raising sex magic? I mean, what does that mean? That raising sexual energy. I mean, you know, is it just the same thing as when you think someone's hot and then you start getting turned on? Is that just a way of saying that? Or is it, can you just describe that a little bit more?
Yeah. So sex magic really is using sexual energy for an intention. It can be an intention like getting to know yourself sexually and erotically more. It can be manifesting something like money. It can be as an act of devotion. So like I work with sex magic as a way of like I give my sexual energies an offering to the goddesses that I work with. You can do sex magic to like, I use it to find an apartment. Yeah. It can really be anything, because sexual energy is life energy. That's literally how we're creating life. It's anybody who's ever been horny knows how powerful and how like physical that feels. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like when you really are like, oh my God, I need a fuck, or like this person's so hot, I can't, like it feels, you feel it in your body. Yeah. All sex magic is working with that intentionally. And there's layers to it. I mean, you could literally just like focus on an intention and masturbate and like visualize the energy moving towards your intention. Yeah. And then as you're laying in the afterglow, like visualize what it would be like to feel like to have that intention manifest. That's a really simple kind of way. And then you can also like circulate the energy, the sexual energy, like through your body and do breath work with it and visualize like a sigil or like becoming a goddess or a god, or like, you know, like connecting to like somebody else's energy. There's lots of different ways to do it, but really what it is working consciously with sexual energy, which like I would argue is the most powerful energy we have. 100%. Simply because it's the energy that sustains life. You know, like it's literally like why we're all here. Even if we're, you know, if we're test tube babies, or if we're like, it doesn't really matter. Like that energy is still like, it's still creative energy. It's still life-giving energy. So it's really just using that for a desired purpose. And there's a lot of different ways to do that, but it's also fun. I mean, like if we're going to masturbate or fuck anyway, like why not make it a magical practice? And I think right now too, like there's such like a rejection of the flesh in a lot of spiritual communities. There's such a rejection of sexuality as a part of like the spirit, that I do think that sex magic is super important, because it reminds us that like actually like many, many ancient cultures, many ancient traditions, many ancient religions have worked with sexual energy as part of spiritual practice. I mean, like you see it in Kabbalah, you see it in Tantra, you see it like it's actually not something that's separate. Like they're two sides of the same coin. I mean, like anybody who's had sex like knows the liminality of it and knows that kind of like power that comes from your ego being dissolved. Yeah. Like it's called, you know, like orgasm in French is le petit mort, the little death. Like it is literally an ego annihilation that allows you to connect with something bigger. So it's really just using that intentionally in a ritual setting, which can be as involved or as simple as you want it to be.
And all, can you talk a little, I just think this is something people out there need to hear. And I would imagine you have some thoughts on this, is like, do you think, okay, consensual sex does not just mean like the person you're with is saying it's okay. Don't you think consensual sex means don't do sex magic on people who haven't told you that it's okay for you to do that? Even if, you know what I mean? Isn't there a way you can, having never met someone, kind of encroach on their space if using some of these techniques?
Yes, I think that I personally, like, I won't do sex magic. Most of my sex magic practice is solo. I always suggest, if you are starting a sex magic practice, if you want to get to know yourself in that way or manifest, like, starting with yourself first and laying that foundation and understanding your erotic energy is always going to be more fruitful, and then you can work with somebody else. Yeah. Trust is a really important factor, whether it's somebody you're, you know, having, like, doing sex magic with that's maybe like anonymous or a partner. I think having that trust is super important. But I think the thing with magic too is that, like, I could tell you what I believe. I could tell you that, like, I personally only practice sex magic with people who are aware and consenting.
Yes.
But that's me. Everybody's gonna, I think a big part of being a sex witch or working with sexual energy in this way is having your own set of ethics, having your own belief system, and knowing what feels right for you, because it has to resonate with you. I have like thought about people and sent energy when they don't know about it, but also how many of us have masturbated while thinking about people that have no idea we're masturbating about them?
Good point.
So it's not really as black and white as we think. And also, like, with love and sex magic too, it's like, if there's not a seed of reciprocity, like, if I'm doing sex magic about somebody who has absolutely no idea I exist, like, that there's no seed to water that's not probably going to manifest, you know? Like, it's like, if I'm doing a love spell or sex magic around somebody who likes me a little bit, then I can cause that to grow and expand. But if that's not there, then it's like, you know, nothing's going to really happen. And, like, things get tricky. Like, I personally am just in the camp of, like, I don't fuck with anybody else's free will. I fuck with my own free will. I do what feels aligned for me. But, like, I just personally, like, I'm like, I don't really cast hexes. I don't really do that kind of thing. Like, I do think there's a time and place. I definitely believe there's a time and place, but just because, like, that's just, like, the kind of moral stance ethics that I believe that aligns with, like, with my practice. So it's not as black and white as people think. And it's also, like, not going to be the end of the world if you, like, think about somebody when you're doing sex magic. Like, do you want to start off that way? Probably not. But, like, also, like, I don't think a pit in hell is going to open up.
Not a pit in hell, but more of, like, an embarrassment. Like, let me ask you this. Can you tell when other people are doing that to you?
Yes, I think so. But I think it's with people that, like, I already kind of have an erotic connection
with.
Like, and I'm definitely, like, very perceptive. I'm definitely, like, probably, like, you know, like, I don't really use the word psychic, but I definitely have those qualities. But it's like, I feel like there's a lot more people, like, honestly, jacking off to me that I are just strangers on the internet that I never want to know about than, like, people that, like, I do want to know about. So, like, I don't really spend so much time worrying about it. I think that kind of goes back to my, the psychic hygiene stuff. Like, that's just, like, I protect my energy. So, like, only that which I'm like, oh, like, I want to know about kind of moves through that sphere.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, it's something I always, sometimes, I mean, without getting into, I don't embarrass anybody or just sound like a complete loon, but I do think folks should know, like, it's not like it's a one-way street. It's like, if someone's sensitive, they might be able to, like, you know, catch a glimpse of, like, oh, you're doing that. That's okay. It's like, I mean, it's sweet, you know, or whatever. But also, I don't know. I just wonder, like, I think technology is going to get to a place where the energy that you're cleansing when you're clapping and doing that stuff is not going to be something that people just talk about, but rather it's going to be like, oh, that's some new form of dark matter, some quantum field or something that we just couldn't measure, but people already intuited. So I, when you start thinking about that, and then you start getting into like the interdependency that we all also already talk about, the web of life, the connection, then in there, consent becomes really curious in the sense that right now consent is more about the physical body. I'm with you. Is this okay? Versus like, can I send energy through the weird psychic mycelial network that connects us all to shift your consciousness a little bit in a way that serves my purposes, you know? It's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, not to, I don't mean to get into like, I don't even, there's probably something already written out there about occult consent, but it's just something I was curious to me.
Yeah, but then it also goes through, it's like if you're sending healing energy to somebody and they don't consent to it, right? Like what these kind of, these energies are, you know, different, but also it's like, what is that? Like, that's technically like a hex because that person doesn't consent to the energy, but like, is that okay?
Yes.
So there's definitely layers of nuance. I definitely think that like, yeah, like, you know, like if somebody were to do a lot of sex magic on me and I were to meet them, I'd probably either like, if I already like them, then I'd probably be like, why am I so attracted to this person or turned on by them? Right. Or I'd be like, this person is giving me the heebie-jeebies and I don't want to be around them.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely, I feel like just because it's like a feeling I don't necessarily like, I just, I'm like, I'll just block that out if it doesn't really resonate, which is, you know, sometimes the best thing you can do is just like not give something more attention, not give something more energy and then feed it, because when you don't want to pay attention to something, that's like, that's, yeah, it's not really what you want to do.
Now, yes, and thank you for that answer. It's super cool. And that's, I never considered the healing hex. Whoa, that's so wild. Like, do we have to get, I can, anyone listening, I consent to all positive healing, please. I'll take every little bit of it.
Right. Even Christians who are like, I'm going to pray for you. I'm like, please, please pray for me. Please send me good energy. Yeah. That's totally fine. Like, I accept it. Like, I don't care if you're praying to Jesus. He was a Jew. Like, he's, we're fine. It's good. Like, but yeah, it's like there's, I think that as humans, again, like we have this kind of very polarized way of thinking and we want to think things are good or bad, but like, it's not, it's never that black or white, especially with like any kind of esoteric or occult thing, especially with energy, which is like its own, you know, exists on a different kind of like layer of reality.
Yes. Now, last question. We've got about 8 minutes. I love occult movies, but because I'm friends with many people who practice magic, who are witches, I get offended by the depiction of witches in a lot of these movies that you, that come out. These are like, you know, like I, like, and my wife too, or we'll, I like, I love Ari Aster. He's great. I like a lot of his movies, but some of his fucking movies are like, who paid for this movie? Is the Catholic Church getting in here? You know what I mean? Like Hereditary, for example, you know what I mean? Like, and I've heard this movie compared to Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby is a depiction of like Satanists. And I think there's a lot of in there that isn't necessarily that far away. It's a little like overemphasizing some of the, like, it's like, it's like pointing towards like a rapey thing. I've, most Satanists I've ever met are really into like power, but they're also into like your own personal authority. They're not like that. But anyway, the whole point is the way in general, the occult is depicted in movies. Do you get offended by that? Do you watch movies where it's showing witches as like, you know, hurting kids or doing these rotten things and feel like offended by it? Or are you able to just like enjoy it without feeling like getting, feeling like it's a personal attack?
I have mixed feelings. Honestly, at this point, I kind of just like it. Like, I'm thinking of like The Witch that came out like what, like 5 or 6 years ago, and I love that movie. I love like the witch rubbing the baby's blood on her and then like them all just like on the broomsticks and naked. I'm like, I want to be in the forest with my friends around a campfire, like floating naked in the woods. It sounds amazing. I personally, like, I'm the kind of person, like, I don't really like, if I'm hate watching something, it's more of like, this looks so dumb, I'm going to really enjoy it, versus like, I hate this, I want to like spend energy on it. I'm just like, I'm of the camp that like, it's much more powerful to make something irrelevant and not give any energy to it than it is to hate something and give energy to it. Like, I really believe that, like, if you hate somebody, just pretend they don't exist. Don't even give any energy, because it's like so much worse than like hating them and like thinking about them and sending them energy and having them in your sphere. So I personally, like, I like the depictions in movies. Like, I love Hocus Pocus. Like, I love, like, yeah, like The Witch. I love the movie The Love Witch by Anna Biller that came out in 2016 or 2017, maybe. So I think they're really fun. But I actually, like, I feel like I watch, like, 5 TV shows and that's it. And, like, I know, like, 3 movies. So okay. I'm, like, I'm not, like, a cinephile, I would say. I really do appreciate a good film. And I do, like, love a good witch moment. But I actually feel like I probably watch more of, like, the cheeky representation of witches than, like, the more new stuff that's coming out. That's, like, I know there was, like, a Salem TV show. And, like, there's, like, a couple other witch shows recently. Like, I don't really even watch those as much, but like I liked Sabrina. I watched the first season and I thought it was pretty good. Cool, but
it's not gonna get like, Sabrina's not gonna trigger QAnon people. That's the problem. I've gotten some creepy messages from QAnon people who are like, "You fucking devil worshiper, you're in league with the devil." It's like, what the fuck? Because, you know, I mean, how many, you know, how far away are we from the kindling getting lit again? You know, that's where I just get like a little whatever. I don't want to end on a dark note. We now have 4 minutes left. I can't believe it, because it feels like a millisecond went by talking to you.
Yes, it does.
I thank you so much for coming on the show, and I wonder, could you please give me and the listeners a little blessing, please, for this for the new moon?
Okay, so yes, the new moon, or whatever phase the cosmic cycle will, cosmic clock will be on. May everybody listening be held in 100% pure light that heals you, that cleanses you of any worries, of any anxieties, of any negative energy. May you be connected to the universe on all planes and always, always. May you remember your divine power, that you are a spiritual embodiment of the divine here as a human to enjoy the pleasures and the play and the wonder and the sadness and the whole array of human emotions in this life, and that you are infinitely powerful, that nobody can take that power away from you, and that your heart continues to guide you through the unknown, and that it continues to inspire you with its strength and resilience, and that you never forget just how incredible you are.
Thank you. I needed that. Yay. Gabriella, thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you, and I hope I get to see you in the real world someday.
Yes, me too.
How can people find you?
You can find me on the internet. I'm super active on Instagram and Twitter, which are both Gabby Herstick, GABYHERSTIK. And my website is GabriellaHerstick.com, which is GABRIELAHERSTIK.com. You can find all the links to my books there, which you can buy at bookstores, and I have a Patreon and sell ritual guides, and all of that stuff is on my website.
Your ritual guides are awesome. Y'all have to check these out. They're so cool. What a wonderful thing you're giving us. Well, okay, thank you. I know that you have to go. Thank you so much. It has really been a joy chatting with you.
Thank you so much, Duncan.
Hare Krishna, thank you. That was Gabby Herstick, friends. All the links you need to find Gabby are going to be at duncantrussell.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Athletic Greens, Upstart, and Squarespace. You can find those offer codes at DuncanTrussell.com, and I hope you'll use them. And a big thank you to you for continuing to listen to the DTFH. I love y'all. P.S. If you happen to be listening to this on Friday, August 6th, I'm going to be appearing Saturday night. That's August 7th. It's my first show and like 16 months at the Vulcan Gas Company. If you go to my Twitter at Duncan Trussell, you can find ticket link there if you want to come see me work on material on Saturday night along with some other great comics. I love you guys and gals and all in between and out of between. I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.